You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Tip of the hat, and many thanks to the great folks at AM Talk 1090 in Seattle, Seattle's Progressive Talk. Had a great weekend there. Mike Papantonio, Randy Rhodes, Ron Reagan, Norman Goldman. Who am I missing? I think that was the lineup. In any case, we had a great time. It was fabulous. And thank you to everybody, Paul and Alexandria and everybody who made it happen. We've had this horrific shooting in Colorado. It's leading all the news. And already the president has said, no, we're not going to bring back the assault weapons ban. In fact, you can find this in several blog posts. It's interesting. Some of the conservative sites as well pointing out that President Obama has expanded gun owner rights more than any president since Reagan. For example, you can have guns on public property and state parks and things like that. So, but I'm of the opinion it's time for us to be really having a conversation about this. So Noel Flasterstein is back with us. He's an attorney and gun rights expert, Second Amendment advocate. His website is gunrightsforyou.com. Noel, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
I think that we can both agree that anything that is explicated, anything that is laid out in the first 10 amendments of the Constitution was pretty important to the founders. The First Amendment guarantees our right of free speech. The Second Amendment, up until 3 years ago, as interpreted by the Supreme Court, guaranteed the right of a militia to be well-armed. And 3 years ago, the Supreme Court said that extends to individuals as well. Which do you think is more important, or do you think that they're equally important, the right to free speech or the right to bear arms?
Well, they're both equally important. And unfortunately, there are people that have opinions and make comments that I don't particularly care for, and some of them are quite, some of them are just probably better not said. And for example, the Westboro Baptist people, well, I think they should be shut down. But unfortunately, we do have a constitution that fortunately recognizes the rights of all individuals. And so we got to put up with those nut jobs that want to have their speech so people that do have worthwhile speech won't be affected. So obviously the Second Amendment is a very important amendment to us as a society, to us as a people. And as you know, it was obviously very important to the founding fathers. And I think if we look at the Declaration of Independence as drafted by Thomas Jefferson, he, acknowledges that the consent of the governed, the governments exist by virtue of the consent of the governed. That's
sure.
Us, the people.
Well, Noel, if the First and Second Amendments, if the right to free speech and the right to bear arms, in your mind, are equally important, we regulate the right to free speech in the United States. There are a lot of things you can't do or say. You can't make bomb jokes in airports. You can't yell fire in a crowded theater. You can't go on radio or television and say obscenities. There are a lot of things that you can't legally cannot say in the United States, and yet we don't say that means that there's no such thing as free speech. Why not say with regard to guns, when in the early days of, in fact, Ron Reagan made this argument over the weekend, I thought it was brilliant. In the early days of cars, there were no rules to the road. It had always been horses, and so nobody had come up with stop signs, nobody had come up with stop lights, nobody had come up with anything. Which side of the road do you drive on? Nothing. And people kept getting killed in these cars early on, and so by the 19-aughts and the 19-teens, we were all across the nation, we were coming up with rules saying, okay, you want to own a car? People can get killed by these things. You got to prove competency. You got to have your name on a record. You got to have a license to drive. Why not do the same for guns?
Yeah, driving a car and operating an automobile is not a fundamental right that our founding fathers and mothers
actually, it is. Actually, it is. The right to free motion, the right to move freely within the United States is clear.
That has nothing to do with cars. You can move freely. Now, I guess we could make a legal argument that obviously this was envisioning cars and such forth, but there's nothing in the Constitution or the amendments specifically addressing cars. There are things that specifically address the right of us, the people, to vote. I mean, I've always said we have three branches of
actually government. Not. There is no right to vote in the Constitution. Just read Bush v. Gore. In the Bush v. Gore ruling, Justice Rehnquist came right out and said there is no explicated right to vote in the U.S. Constitution. Therefore,
there is a right
to
possess and hold arms. There is a right for the people to protect themselves. And we have three branches of government, the executive referring to the presidency, the legislative referring to the Congress that makes the laws, and, of course, the judiciary that interprets them. And what gives us our form of government, any substance, is us, the people, the fourth branch of government, as our founding fathers intended, and that's us, the people. And what gives us any right, our checks and balances on the other branches, is our right to vote, which you've just informed me we don't have a constitutional right with. I'm not going to dispute
tragically
that.
Yes.
But what gives that checks and balance that we do have any meaning, any substance, is our Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. Because if the people themselves cannot have the ability to protect themselves as the founding fathers envisioned, this government could run amok. And I thank the Lord that we do have an NRA.
But isn't the right to speak out every bit as important as the right to carry a gun in your mind, particularly if you're concerned about the government? I mean, if you're going to foment a revolution against an oppressive government, you're going to have to talk about it first. And even there, call up the FBI and tell them that you're planning on doing something nasty to an elected official. You will find your butt in jail so fast. We have limits on the right to free speech, and they're not irrational limits. They're reasonable limits. Why not have reasonable limits on the right to bear arms?
I would agree with you to the extent that, yes, I don't want my neighbor to have plutonium-grade uranium or some sort of nuclear device. But in terms of his ability to have an assault rifle, which I believe professionally and personally, the founding fathers intended anything.
They did not exist at the time of the Constitution being written.
Individual should be able to have.
There was the Gatling gun hadn't even been invented at the time the Revolution was started. It was flint loaders. Or flintlocks.
What does that have to do with the ability of the people to protect themselves from the government? There has to be a match per match for the arms that the government can have that the individuals can have.
Nowhere in the constitutional debates. I defy you to find it. Madison kept meticulous records about the constitutional debates. Nowhere in the Federalist Papers. I've read these things. Nowhere will you find any of the founders of this country asserting directly that the right to bear arms was the right to overthrow the government of the United States or to stand up to it. That's not why the right to bear arms was there. It was to protect our country, not to protect against our country.
I got the Declaration of Independence, and it clearly says
we had no government at the time of the Declaration of Independence. It was Great Britain.
Well, then we should just ignore the Declaration of Independence. It means nothing.
We can ignore it right now because we're not occupied by a foreign government.
That's right. And if the government were to take away the individual's right to keep and bear arms, then we could have a Hitler's Germany. We could have dictators.
I don't think so. Hitler's Germany was very well armed. Hitler was fetishized guns. There were guns all over Germany.
And the first thing he did when he came to power is he disarmed the Jews.
It's a nice myth, but it's not true, Noel.
Then he disarmed all the other undesirables
in
his political scheme.
No, he didn't.
Of course he did.
No.
Went right to the gun registration law. Why do you think
the National Gun Registration Law in Germany, Noel, was in 1927, long before Hitler came along, and in 1935, during the Hitler regime, Hitler backed off on the National Gun Registration and made it possible for any German to own a gun except Jews.
The Weimar Republic instituted the gun registration.
Right. This was before
and when
Hitler.
Hitler came to power. He said, "Okay, I need to disarm my enemies and the undesirable."
No, Hitler made it easier to buy guns in 1935. Look it up.
I did look it up, and I respectfully disagree with you.
Okay. Well, Neil, we'll have to leave it at that. People can check it out for themselves. Gunrightsforyou.com. Thanks, Neil.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So, what do we do? What is rational gun control? And do we need more of it? I think so. We'll be back. Welcome back. People just need to be free, right? Yeah, well, Rose, John in Santa Barbara. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how are you today?
Great. What's up?
As a survivor of a suicide my son committed 5 years ago this Friday.
Oh, my.
While being medicated by Navy doctors on two different SSRIs, I see a common denominator here in this country with a lot of violence and suicides of young men, both in and out of the military.
Yeah.
Couldn't help but watch this morning as they trotted this young man into court in Colorado and see that glassy-eyed appearance, and yeah, immediately the question comes to mind, how is this guy on drugs? Obviously, he's on some sort of drugs. My question is it in fact possible that they are dealing with someone who was treated with SSRIs here? I know as a parent, my son had no indications whatsoever that he was about to take his own life.
Right.
He was someone who was literally opposed to suicide.
Yeah. Well,
so my question is, how can we, I mean, this is a lot bigger question than just the Colorado incident, but
sure,
how can we find out and stop the distribution of these drugs, Tom?
It's a real tough one, John. First of all, my condolences on your loss. I can't imagine. I have three kids. I just can't imagine. It's got to be a horrible thing.
It's horrible.
Yes. And
it's a nightmare.
I believe you. And the SSRIs, the whole thing about SSRIs, I mean, we've got a soldier committing suicide every single day in the United States right now. And, between the ages of 20 and 24. And these drugs, these SSRI drugs, are being passed out by like candy by the Veterans Administration, and they are black labeled with suicide as one of the major side effects. That everybody should understand. I mentioned Peter Bregan on the show last week. He's a psychiatrist who's all over this stuff. He sent me an email over the weekend saying, do you want me to come on and talk about it? And I said, if you can find any evidence that this kid is on SSRIs, yes, I want to be all over it and talk about it. It's something typically people don't talk about you will not hear a conversation about it, for example, on any network television program, because they make so much money off the pharmaceutical industry, they will not take them on. But I've been talking about this for years, and I think it's a horror that these SSRIs are not, that the warnings are not being made clearer, and that there are so many of them being used. I realize that there are some people for whom they are godsend. There are many people for whom placebos work just as well, and there is a small percentage, tragically large small percentage of people who end up like your son and commit suicide. We don't know yet about this guy, but I watched that same video this morning, John, and the thing that I noticed was that his eyes only moved in two areas. He was either looking straight ahead or he was looking down into his left. And typically when a person is processing thinking, is engaged in the cognitive process, their eyes look up when they're accessing visual memory. They look from side to side when they're remembering sounds or voices, or they're thinking about what they're going to say. They look down into the right when they're experiencing feelings. They look down into the left, or it depends on whether they're left or right-handed, down into the left when they're thinking about what they're going to say. They're rehearsing words in their mind. And he was doing virtually none of that, which led me to the same conclusion that you jumped to, that this kid was either – actually, I said it's one of two things. In fact, I said this to Sam, my producer, this morning, a couple hours ago. I said either he is heavily medicated or he is genuinely crazy and doesn't have access to large parts of his own ability to be, cognitive, to think. So I don't know what it is. But, John, thank you for the call. And
bye-bye.
I thank you. I wish you the very best in recovering from this. As I said, I just can't imagine. Alan in Birmingham, Alabama. Hey, Alan, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I was going to make a comment along the same lines, that rather than only gun regulation, perhaps we need more access to mental health care.
Yeah.
I mean, not that that would have stopped this young guy. I mean, I don't know if he was getting care or if he
Well, and one of the problems is that people who go looking for mental health care end up on SSRI drugs, and one of the big side effects is either suicide or suicide by cop and killing a whole bunch of other people. You look at all the kids who have been involved in these mass shootings who have been on these SSRI drugs, and I think it's frankly an indictment of the drugs. It's not universal, of course, but it's more often than it should be.
So let me add to that. I think the drugs are given in lieu of real counseling.
That's right.
I have experience with this with my youngest son. He's on a cocktail of antidepressants now that, you know, allows him to function quite well. Mm-hmm. But he tried suicide at one time, and you know the drugs have to be adjusted.
Yeah.
They need, you know, they don't need to go to the doctor once in a while. They have to go, you know, frequently.
Right.
And adjust these things. And that's what I think isn't really available.
And that's one of the problems. Psychologists who don't have the right to prescribe typically have a meeting with you for an hour. You know, if you're going to meet a psychologist periodically, you know, once a week, once a month, whatever, they sit and talk with you for an hour. Psychiatrists who are MDs and have the right to prescribe, they typically meet with you anywhere from 7.5 to 15 minutes, depending on which insurance company
exactly.
they're billing
exactly.
or which HMO they're a part of. And you
right.
cannot do therapy in that period of time. It's not even possible. All you can do is get enough of a medical profile to decide whether this particular drug is going to cause, you know, is this a person who shouldn't take it because of, you know, high blood pressure or something. I mean, it is just so wrong. Our psychiatric system is so screwed up. Alan, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. After the break, we've got a bunch of calls on this topic. We will pick those up. But I also have to share with you the new right-wing theory about why this happened. There is actually a theory, and I will share clips with you, that the government did this in order to take away our guns, right? This was just the same as Daryl Issa's Fast and Furious theory. Scare people to take away their
You're
guns.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
It was the black ops. He was doing it to get gun control. No, I'm serious. I'll play the clip right after this. Welcome back. 34 minutes. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. The old misfire. Okay, let me just share this with you. Alex Jones has been a guest on this program a number of times over the years. In fact, we simulcast a show together back about 3 years ago. It's a YouTube sensation. It was on tax day on April 15th, and Alex showed up naked from the waist up. He said, the tax man took the shirt off my back. Alex has, and you know, Alex is a fairly well-known guy in the far right. Alex has some specific theories on this. Clip number 7. Here is Alex suggesting that perhaps the killing in Colorado was staged.
So let me ask you this question. If they would stage Fast and Furious, if they would ship up to 20,000 guns and hand grenades to Mexico, and then the memos came out in CBS News to blame the Second Amendment, would they stage this?
Well, would they? Is it first of all, this the assumption of his argument is the assumption that a number of Republicans, including Daryl Issa, have made publicly, that Fast and Furious, which actually started under the Bush administration with a different name, which was tracking the straw buyers, the people who would buy these, they would hire, you know, a legal American with no criminal record to walk into a gun shop and buy 100 AK-47s. And under Arizona law, if you walk out of that, you have to declare that they're for your own personal use. But once you walk out of the store, you can decide to change your mind, literally the minute you get outside the store. And so people would buy 100 guns, sign the declaration that it was for their own personal use, go outside the store, change their mind, and load those guns into a truck that was headed for Mexico that was, you know, one of the narco guys, right? And Fast and Furious was an attempt to track this, to find out where these guns were going and to bust people. And they actually tried to arrest a number of people, and they couldn't get a judge in Arizona. The Arizona laws are so weak on this that they were unable to stop the process. But the right-wing theory is that Fast and Furious was an attempt to get guns into the hands of the narco guys so that they would kill a bunch of Americans so that all of America would go, oh no, look at the gun violence, we need to do away with the Second Amendment, please Mr. Obama, take away our guns. And yes, the right wingers actually believe that Fast and Furious was done by Eric Holder and Barack Obama, these two African-American, these two black guys in the White House, got together to sell a whole bunch of weapons to brown people down in South America so that they would come up here and shoot the white people, who would then say, oh, we don't want guns anymore. So that, you know, and I say that intentionally because there is a racial component to that argument as made on many websites and by many of these people. So first of all, here, that was Alex Jones asserting that conspiracy theory, or at least part of it, about Fast and Furious, and asking the question, if Fast and Furious was staged, which it wasn't, I mean, it's been debunked, but if it was staged, was this staged? Then he continues about this. Clip 8.
And that's exactly what's happening here with the Loeffner case in Arizona, and now this new one in Colorado. They follow the complete M.O.
Okay, so in other words, when Gabby Gifford was shot, that was another attempt by the Obama administration, having a congresswoman shot in the head and eight other people killed. That was an attempt by the Obama administration to cause us all to go, please, Mr. Obama, take away all the guns. Alex Jones, clip 3.
You have your black op operator coming in a mask, just like Columbine, other events. They do the killing. Then you either kill or drug a patsy who's waiting with amnesics or other chemicals, who will then take the blame.
So this guy was set up by President Obama to do this and drugged, and or in the case of some of these mass murders, the killers get killed. So what do you think? Could it be? I don't, you know, I'll tell you my answer. I'd say, no, that's nuts. But who knows? Jeff in Denver. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Before I get to the main point, I just want to point out the Nazi law, that was weapons law of 1938, did relax the laws over the Weimar Republic.
Yeah, that was the, you said 38. I thought it was 35. But yes, you're right. And that's the point I kept trying to make.
Yeah. Hitler gave people more rights on the guns rather than less.
Right. Because anyway, the Nazis were all about guns. I mean, it was a manly man thing, you know? Hey, have a gun.
If you want to look at the thing of protecting us against oppressive governments, to me, I've said this before on the show, you got to look at the present situation and see if people having a lot of guns, they're able to protect themselves against the governments or oppressive regimes and the other governments that have strict laws.
Right.
If you look at Iraq and if you look at Afghanistan, the populace was very heavily armed, yet they had oppressive governments. You look at Australia, Japan, Canada, they have some fairly strict gun laws, especially in regards to handguns, yet they have very free governments.
Yeah.
And you know, if you look at countries like Serbia is a very armed country, yet they had an oppressive government.
Yep.
And if you look at examples of governments that have been overthrown successfully, you'll see Serbia is peaceful. If you look at Iraq and Afghanistan, there's still nothing is settled there.
Right.
They're still very violent countries. So I don't see examples of guns protecting us from our governments.
Yeah, very well said, Jeff. Thank you. Excellent point. Bob in Detroit. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Tom. I was hoping you could maybe help guide me a little bit in some of my thoughts, because I don't have the facts kind of as accurately as you do. But I think, am I correct, there's about 300 million handguns in the United States today?
I don't know. I don't know the number.
Well, I know that the number has risen dramatically, but I'm in my 40s, and I can recall, you know, when I was a lot younger, the argument for gun control was always, you know, personal defense. And and today, the proponents of the argument seem to have shifted to the whole tyranny-based premise. And
right.
I thought Jeff just raised a great point. I've always wondered that myself, which is, especially as he said today, in the age of predator drones and so forth, how on earth would a populace defend itself against a tyrannical government with the armaments that the United States has?
Yeah.
But that's
yeah.
that's kind
well,
of
and beyond
the
that,
point.
None of the founders envisioned that. The Second Amendment does not. I mean, if the founders intended that we should be able to overthrow our own government should it ever go wrong with something other than the ballot box, which is how they all envisioned it, you know, that you would change the government is through the ballot box. If they envisioned our violently overthrowing our own government, then laws against surface-to-air missiles, laws against you know, high-fire semi-automatic weapons, laws against mortars and mines and tanks, all of those should fall under the Second Amendment. And nobody, even the right-wing crazies, don't suggest that those. Well, maybe a few of them do, but you know, I mean, the state of the art at the time that the Constitution was written was not multi fire weapons. It was, you know, flintlocks. But they also had cannons, and they also had warships. And it doesn't say that the right of individuals to own a cannon shall not be abridged.
No, I agree with you. But I have another question, and it really relates to the money behind these campaigns and the lobbyists, and that's something that we don't really know much about. And that's something I was hoping you could shed some light on, and as a populace we can become more educated about, because it seems to me that it's much like smoking 10, 20, 30 years ago. There isn't a lot of good that comes out of it, yet there's a tremendous amount of money behind it, and it seems to be almost insurmountable. And where's the money? Can we start identifying? I'm pro-sportsman. I have no issue with anybody that's a hunter and that's part of Americana, but handguns, assault weapons, and so forth, that's just a ludicrous indefensible
point of view. Well, the argument that was made for handguns 20, 30 years ago, you're absolutely right, Bob. It typically ran along the lines of, and it was amazing the number of people who used to call into the show and say, well, I know somebody who got carjacked, you know, or his wife got, usually it's his white wife got carjacked by a black guy and she pulled out a gun and made him run off. Yeah, I have heard that so many times, and it's like the Vanishing Hitchhiker story. It's an urban legend that, again, has a racial tinge to it and was used at that time. Now, in the last 4 years, it has changed dramatically now that we've got an African-American in the White House. And I think that it is still the same racist argument, or there's a piece to that. That there's always been a weird fringe in this country, the David Koresh fringe, that was concerned that the government was too powerful and that they needed to arm up. But this goes beyond that.
I wonder if it's more about, you know, selling handguns. And I look at it more from that standpoint. I'm very skeptical about that and wonder, can we identify the sources of the funding, and can that be more of the focus of reporting so that we can, you know, the American public seems to be buying the commercial about, you know, protecting themselves instead of looking at it the way I am tending to look at it, which is this is all about gun sales. And
it's all about making money. But in fact, let me give you an example.
I'll let you answer. Go ahead.
You know, the stand your ground laws, the shoot first laws, which radically liberalized the ability to kill other people. And those came out of the American Legislative Exchange Council, Paul Weyrich's group that he started back 30 years ago, and where Republican legislators sit in a room 50-50 with lobbyists twice a year and come up with legislation to be introduced in state houses. And those stand your gun laws were principally supported by two organizations, the National Rifle Association and Walmart. Why? Because Walmart's the largest retailer of guns in the United States, and the NRA is basically the trade association for the people who manufacture guns and ammunition. So, yeah, Bob, it's the old Bob Woodward, Carl Bernstein thing, follow the money. And I think that that's very much the case. Although, as I said, the arguments that are being made now about all of a sudden our government got tyrannical when President Obama, you know, got into office, say, you know, we were not hearing this argument during the Bush administration from the right. I think that there's something to that, too.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And now they're even going farther and saying, oh, yeah, and in fact, you know, Fast and Furious and this and this and the, and this killing and conflict, these were staged by the Obama administration.
Monday, Monday. So good to me. Monday,
happy Monday. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Dave in Asheville, North Carolina, you agree with Alex Jones?
Usually. I don't know if that makes me a crazy person.
I agree with Alex Jones on a lot of things, frankly. It's one of the reasons why we've been on each other's shows. But I don't agree with him on this one.
I don't know that I necessarily agree with him on this one. I just wanted to call in and kind of stick up for him, because the term conspiracy theory is kind of a conspiracy theory on its own.
Oh, I agree. I wrote two books on the Kennedy assassination. I could tell you all about that.
It's a psychological mechanism to protect people's own shallow worldviews. They hear the term conspiracy theory or even Alex Jones now, and they just automatically think, oh, he's crazy.
Well, I'm not saying that Alex is crazy, and I've never said that. I have a, you know, as I said, I have a lot of respect for Alex. We simulcast, as I pointed out a couple of years ago on Tax Day, we simulcast our shows together. But on this one, I think he's wrong. And I know, but my point isn't Alex. My point is that there are a whole bunch of people on the hard right, the kind of Glenn Beck fringe, who are, and I don't know Glenn Beck's position on this, but just, you know, kind of that fringe, who are saying, this is that's what this was about. This is the government trying to stir up gun control laws. And I don't believe it. Ken in Virginia Beach. Hey, Ken, what's up?
Well, I was going to comment on the Second Amendment, but
okay,
the other gentleman and yourself cleared it up. I want to thank you for your broadcast and for your insightful comments.
Okay. Are you talking about the discussion we had a few minutes ago about how the Second Amendment was written so that during times of peace we could take the army down to zero, and that's why...
Well, that and the fact that the Founding Fathers wanted to have strong states' right. Well, they wanted to have the states comfortable with the central government.
Right.
And by having a militia, that would kind of impede the influence of the central government.
Yep. And you know, who blew that up was George W. Bush during the invasion of Afghanistan, when he started conscripting. He started going to individual states and saying, you have to send your National Guard to Afghanistan and Iraq. And several states said, no, we won't do it.
Well,
and the Bush administration pushed it through. And I don't recall if they pushed a law through Congress or if they simply got a court ruling. But what was it, Shano?
Do you
know?
It was just
an executive order. Okay.
Well, I have a statement to make with regard to that.
Sure.
Why do you think that ICE had the catch and release policy in place from the time he was sworn into office until the Democrats took control of Congress? They would keep immigration and
you said immigration. I got all that. You said from the time he came into office, was that
from
George Bush or Barack
George
Obama?
W. Bush took office.
Oh, okay.
Until 2006, if you were an illegal alien and they picked you up,
right, it was catch and release.
They would take your picture, fingerprint you, and you would be run through the database.
Right.
If you didn't come up as a terrorist, they kicked you loose.
Right. And the reason for that was because there were so many employers, large employers in this country, who were making so much money off illegal immigrants, people who were undocumented here, you know, they wanted to drive down the cost of labor and help out their buddies, particularly in the meatpacking and construction industries. That's no mystery on my part. Anthony in Bloomington, Indiana. Hey, Anthony, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how's it going?
Good.
I actually was just calling to comment about you're talking about fascist Germany, and I've actually spent a lot of time in Germany in actually this past year. And they've actually, since pretty much under Adenauer in Western Germany, and specifically in the reunification of Germany in 1989, they've actually cracked down on their gun laws. As of right now, you can own a gun, but you can't have it in your house. Even police officers, when they leave work, they have to check their pistol in, and they can't take it home. The only way that you can have a gun in your home is if you have a hunting license,
right,
which is only during specific times of the year.
Very interesting. I did not know it was that restrictive. But again, it's a point. I don't think anybody in Germany would say we're not free.
Yeah. No. I mean, I think they would say that they've been the most free now than they have since the 30s.
Yeah. I'm right there with you, Anthony. Thank you, Mary in Minneapolis. Hey, Mary, what's up?
Hey, I just wanted to comment on the whole SSRI thing.
Mm-hmm.
I know of a person who's a friend of mine who was on an SSRI. I just wanted to say it is very possible for people to want to commit suicide on those. And she said she was driving down the street one day and she just got this overwhelming urge to drive and right in front of a semi truck and just let it kill her.
Wow.
And also wanted to say that I suffered from depression myself for 20 years, and in case anybody out there is listening who knows somebody or is someone with a depression issue, I resolve it by having my mercury fillings out of my teeth.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, there's. I actually did that myself about 20 years ago, and
yeah, it's one of the most toxic things. And also, Another thing that a lot of people have and are totally unaware of is that gluten can make you want to commit suicide. And
I don't know about that, but I can tell you gluten makes me it is not good to me.
I do know about it because this clinic in Chicago that I went to called the Pfeiffer Treatment Center, and I am plugging it, and I highly recommend it. To anybody who has any of these so-called mental illnesses, they told me that you can get suicidal from it. If I eat it now, and I haven't been off it for a long time, I get extremely depressed.
Yeah, most people who have problems with gluten, it's more like in the category of food poisoning. But yeah. Excellent point. Mary, thank you very much. Mark, we just have a half a minute here. It's all yours.
Tom,
in Beloit, Wisconsin.
Very good point. You covered most of what I believe. Yeah, the NRAs went far to the right. They used to talk about, I was a member in the early 70s, about home protection, and then the race riots, you know, they talked about them, and there was always that tinge, but now they went to this totalitarian government, and they went far to loony. But I personally believe the wealthy, which the Republican Party is for, it isn't like when your dad, Dwight Eisenhower, anymore.
Right.
I believe that they thought, hey, we got to get some more people to help us out and vote for us. So they use this gun issue with Joel Sixpack.
Yeah, it's a wedge issue. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It's, you know, be afraid you're going to lose your guns. Be afraid that gays are going to, you know, be whatever, living next door to you. And what color is that guy in a White House?
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, Mitt Romney is proposing a piece of legislation here that would basically permanently exempt corporations who make their profits overseas from paying U.S. taxes. Seems to me like that would encourage them to make more things overseas and keep their money overseas. What am I missing here? Curtis Dubé is a senior policy analyst and tax policy at the Heritage Foundation, heritage.org. Curtis, welcome back to the program.
Glad to be here.
Center for American Progress says Romney's tax plan is going to kill 800,000 U.S. jobs. How does it help us to say to transnational corporations, if you manufacture things outside the United States, you don't have to pay taxes?
Well, first of all, it shows the depths of the Obama campaign's desperation that they had to rely on a study from a campaign contributor. The person who wrote that study, the New York Times, who touted it and said agreed with the conclusions, they have exactly backwards. If we went to what President Obama's proposing, which is going taxing the worldwide profits of all of our businesses, we end up killing more jobs. The proper treatment.
Well, wait a minute. Germany does that. South Korea does that. Taiwan does that. Japan does that. China does that. I don't see any of those countries having problems with their with.
They don't do that to the extent that we do it. They do it
massively more than we do it. Most of it they do with value added taxes, but they do it massively more than we do.
No, well, you can't conflate the two. You can't talk about value added tax and one.
You absolutely can.
Corporate income tax.
They're applying VAT taxes to things made outside their country. It's a form of tariff.
They border adjust them. That's different. We're talking about the corporate income tax. We don't have a VAT. So
that's what I'm talking about. A border adjusted VAT is a tariff. I mean, if we're not going to have VAT taxes, we should at least have tariffs. But to say that we should have no taxes, that's crazy.
You were misinformed on a VAT, but that is not the discussion. The discussion is the corporate income tax. We are the outlier when it comes around the world when it comes to taxing our businesses on the income they earn for products they sell, products and services they sell abroad. We'd be much more competitive
as federal income tax
back here if we went to what every other country does, which is only tax our businesses on the income they earn within our borders.
Well, if you want to add to that a VAT tax, like all those countries that I just listed, or, you know, actually most of those countries have variations on import taxes. Sometimes they're called fees. Sometimes they're called duties. They have domestic content rules in all of those countries except one. I mean, we're doing none of that. We're doing no rational trade stuff whatsoever. You've got American corporations, American-based transnational corporations, sitting on $2 trillion inside the United States, $3 trillion outside the United States. They're not bringing back because they don't want to pay taxes on it. Shouldn't we be saying to American-based corporations, you know, if you want to call yourself an American corporation, GE, then start making things in America. General Electric made more than half their revenue outside the United States last year. They're not an American company.
well, was that a bad thing that an American company is selling lots of products around the world? We should be encouraged by that, especially because if business...
Not if they're paying no taxes here, and yet they're using our court system and our military to protect their shipping lanes and to enforce their contracts.
Put the taxes aside for a second. They're employing lots of American workers. That's a very good thing. We should be encouraged by that.
Come on. Jack Welch brags in his autobiography about how back in the early 1980s he was over in India to sell a power plant to the Indians. He was the CEO of General Electric, and he looked around and said, hey, look at all these people. They speak English. Why am I paying anybody to do my bookkeeping? And why am I paying anybody to answer the phone? And he started proudly, still brags about it to this day, proudly, the process of outsourcing pink and white collar jobs.
But that's a good thing? The logical conclusion of what you're proposing, which is to tax the worldwide profits of, say, GE at the time they're earned. What would be the result? We wouldn't have American companies. They would just pull up stakes and they'd move.
The result would be that GE would split into a number of companies. GE's European operations would become a European-based company. And by the way, they would be paying taxes in Europe. GE's Australian operations would become, an Australian corporation. They would be paying taxes in Australia. And GE in the U.S. might actually pay something in taxes. They paid no taxes last year, No federal income taxes. Or the year before that.
All years after the big 2007 crash, if you want big corporations to pay more taxes, get the economy going again, get their profits going up, and they'll still pay lots of taxes.
We have the second lowest effective tax rate, actually paid income corporate income tax rate in the developed world. The second lowest. We may have the top at 35%. We may have the top rate that we point to and brag about. But in fact, corporations in the United States pay on average around 7%.
I'm not sure where you got that, because usually the studies show that our effective tax rate is still in the top five.
No.
Compared to developed countries.
No, it is not. If you look at the OECD standards, we are number two in the OECD.
I think you're probably looking at it as the terms of gross domestic product. But remember, we're different than every other country. We have pass-through entities. Other countries don't have those. You have to add those in to get an apples-to-apples comparison.
We have what?
S-corporations, LLCs, partnerships.
Oh, pass-throughs.
Pass-throughs, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe not. I mean, those corporate forms exist pretty much all around the world and have grown dramatically since the 80s. But the other thing is that if you go back to the Eisenhower years, a little over 30% of all federal revenues were from corporate income taxes. Right now it's less than 10% of all federal revenues are from...
It's the change in incorporation forms. A lot of the income shifted over to the individual side.
Right, so the Koch brothers call some of their companies, sub-S companies, oh, it's a small business, right? And we
Koch
just
brothers.
Put it
on
our personal income taxes.
S-corps, partnerships, LLCs, all those things. It's not just the Koch brothers doing it. It's not some nefarious device. There's nothing wrong with having a flow-through entity. It's a legitimate way to incorporate a business. You have lots of them.
But let's tax people reasonably. Let's tax those businesses or those people reasonably at that.
They pay tax. They don't escape any taxation.
No, if you call it carried interest, you pay a maximum 15% income tax.
That's different. This is business income earned through flow-throughs.
That's how Mitt Romney does it.
Well, he's earning carried interest. I'm talking about the business itself. I'm not talking about an individual investor.
Well, arguably that's a pass-through. I mean, we're way down in the weeds. Let's pull out and look at this thing from 50,000 feet. Why shouldn't we simply say to an American-based corporation, if you want to incorporate in this country, if you want use of our military to defend your products, if you want use of our worldwide copyright and patent police, and they are worldwide, it's a huge cost to the federal government, if you want use of our court systems to defend those things, your patents and your trademarks around the world, then you're going to have to pay taxes in the United States.
Well, U.S. companies that are headquartered here pay lots of tax here in the U.S. And the reason what we
not
want
on their overseas operations where we're still defending them. We go to China and we have government officials from the United States going to China, running around looking for fake Apple products, and yet Apple is not paying U.S. income taxes on their profits in China.
Well, we want businesses to grow and add more workers here in the U.S. That's the ultimate goal. That's what we want.
So let's bring our jobs back home.
If their products are in demand around the world, they'll grow back here. The research has coalesced around this kind of common sense fact. If Apple's selling more iPads over in China or around the world, they're going to end up employing more people back here because the chasing that demand, they're going to end up employing more American workers.
Then why is it that the Fortune 500 companies have been shedding employees for over two decades?
look, they
have been laying off. For every American they lay off, they hire 2.2 people outside the United States. This has been going on for 20 years.
I haven't
ever
seen
since NAFTA and CAFTA and SHAFTA.
I'm not sure where you got that. But again, it's never a bad thing when a U.S. company is finding more demand for its products abroad. It's selling more of its stuff. That means job growth back here.
If it's made here, I agree with you. If it's a U.S.-based company making things in China and selling things in Taiwan and making and paying no U.S. profit on it, I don't see where's the benefit to the United States is.
To meet that demand, to make those products, I guarantee you that if they're headquartered in the U.S., they're growing jobs back here because that the capabilities to do that expansion are centered.
No, the principal thing for that expansion is you've got expanded needs for bookkeeping. GE has outsourced that to India. You know, Jack Welch brags about it. You got customer service. GE and other companies brag about the fact that they outsourced that to the Philippines and to India. You've got what else? What else do you need? Engineers? Apple's building engineering centers in China right now.
I've got a whole list of them. I mean, there's lots of different functions that end up at a corporate headquarters. Executive services, business services, accounting,
so the CEOs
finance,
are making
legal.
A bunch of money. But
there's a lot. A lot of other things besides CEOs.
Okay. Curtis Dubé, people can read all about it over at heritage.org. Senior policy analyst at the Heritage Foundation. Curtis, thanks for dropping by today.
Thank you.
Good talking with you. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So, should we start taxing these big corporations on money they make overseas? Because they're making a lot of it.
Working for a living, I'm taking what they're giving because I'm working for a living.
Helping you win the water cooler wars, Tom Harbin here with you. Welcome back. Bob in Lakewood, Colorado. Excuse me, listening on AM 760. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Hello, Tom. You know, I did the research about the gun laws in Germany, and other people have supported your position that Hitler did make it easier for the Germans to own guns.
It's a matter of the historical record.
Yeah. But what I wanted to just add a point to that, a better test of a totalitarian society is, do they tolerate independent labor unions? And the answer is no, which is sort of a
The answer here is no. The answer in Germany is they don't just tolerate them. They require any organization, any corporation that has more than 1,000 employees, 50% of their board of directors had to be made up of representatives of organized labor.
Yeah. So. But, I mean, this trend with the right to work for less states here is a bad omen.
Yeah, I agree. And again, not one that we need guns to fight. We need ballots to fight it, which, of course, is why the Republicans are trying to, you know, all these voter suppression laws all over the country, brought to you again by Alec. Bob, thank you. Excellent point. Lee in Milwaukee, Oregon. Hey, Lee, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I want to suggest that we might change the language we're using about the gun control debate. Instead of gun control, which seems to scare hunters and, you know, responsible gun owners, how about we start using, in the wake of these tragedies, high-powered automatic assault weapon control or high-caliber multi-clip bullet control?
Yes.
Now, you know more about guns than I. You might be able to tweak that a little better, but I really think it might make a difference if we
Let's just start calling them military-style weapons control, okay? Because these high-capacity clips are used primarily for military purposes, and these semi-automatic weapons, largely the AR-15 that this guy had, they're only designed to kill people. They're war devices. So you're absolutely right. Instead of calling it gun control, we should call it military or assault weapon control. Absolutely right. Very, very well said. Thank you. Bethany in Chicago. Hey, Bethany, what's up?
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to bring up the NRA saying that the ending the Chicago gun ban would make us safer, that it hasn't, and I haven't seen any address to that or any of these massacres. It just seems that public safety isn't a concern at all.
Yeah.
And I just want to say that our problem is that the only industry we have left is guns, is arms. And
well, let me add to that. An awful lot of these guns are imported from overseas. You know, the Glocks, the Rugers, the H&Ks. I mean, they're all made in Germany or Austria.
We really need to start pushing for other industry. I just wanted to bring up Reverend Roger Christie again, who is in jail for using marijuana in Hawaii and 2 years without a trial. And it's just ridiculous that you're not talking about hemp and other sustainable energies, and yeah. And it's a frightening time.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Bethany, thank you for the call. Wayne, and thanks for listening to KPOJ. Wayne in Eugene, Oregon, listening on KPOJ. Hey, Wayne, what's up?
Hi. Since everybody's speculating about SSRIs and stuff in relation to this shooter, I'd like to pose a possible alternate explanation that I have a couple incidents to relate. Number one, back in the 50s, there was a guy named Charles Whitman,
mm-hmm.
Who climbed up in the University of Texas clock tower and shot dozens of people and was eventually shot to death.
Yep.
He had a brain tumor pressing on areas of his brain that, you know, made him delusional.
Hmm.
So,
interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I personally did the post-op nursing care on a man who's back in the 60s who, for 20 years, he'd been in out of jails due to violent rages that he had no explanation for, didn't seem to be able to control. And I was working at a big research hospital, and like I say, in the 60s, we didn't have MRIs or anything, but they found a brain aneurysm, and we repaired the brain aneurysm, and he was fine.
Wow.
You know, so these things happen, and this guy needs to be screened, especially with this dull, dazed appearance he had. We don't know what the hell is going on. Any defense attorney worth his salt will have an MRI on him, as soon as possible.
Yeah.
But we need to hold out these possibilities. And what we're learning now about repeated concussions and head injuries, and we have a lot of people shooting themselves.
Yes. Yeah, there are a variety of possibilities. Another one that nobody, and thank you for the call, another one that nobody is talking about is that the United States is the richest country in the world. We have $41 trillion worth of wealth in this country. We have over 440 billionaires in this country. The second wealthiest country in the world is China, and they have 125 billionaires. But the difference is that the United States, while we are the richest country in the world, if you look at our median in wealth, not income, but our median income is pretty bad too. It's $25,600 a year. That's half America makes more than that, half America makes less than that. And try living on $25,600 a year, especially if you're raising a family. Number one, but number two, in terms of wealth, everything that you own, Japan is way ahead of us. Taiwan is way ahead of us. Australia is like four times the wealth of the average American. And, you know, we're way down there, like, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13, something like that. We're way down there on median wealth. And we have this huge inequality. We've got more billionaires. We've got more poor people. And I think, frankly, inequality has something to do with it as well. Dolores in Portland. Hey, Dolores, what's on your mind?
Yes, Tom. I think we have, as a society, we've come to the point where we've let these greedy people, the hate mongers, you know, like you say, starting back at Reagan with the tax base and making the economy so accessible to be taken over by rich people. I don't think we'll ever get back again, and I think that's something we're going to have to come to grips with.
Yeah, Dolores, I don't disagree with you, and I agree. And well said. And by the way, let me, you know, I pick on Ronald Reagan a lot, but let me say I read Ron Reagan, his son's book about his father, and Ronald Reagan surrounded himself with a lot of bad people. I'm not convinced that he himself was one. In fact, I don't believe that he himself was one. And this is where we have to recognize. In fact, Chris Hedges has a really good piece over on truthout.org today about kind of the banality of evil, the bureaucrats, the people around who basically do these things.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
You know, whether it was the guys saying, oh, yeah, get in that train car, you know, in Germany in the 30s, or whether it was the guys saying, oh, yeah, we'll give tax breaks to the billionaires. It'll work out for the best. Okay, the Sarah Palin look-alike that's going around. In fact, actually, there was a woman who looked a lot like Sarah Palin in Seattle day before yesterday. That was fascinating. But there's actually a kind of like official Sarah Palin look-alike. She's going to be stripping at a strip club 5 miles from the Republican National Convention in Tampa. They're expecting a dramatic increase in business. Of course, you know, I mean, this is kind of axiomatic. When the Republicans come to town, the hookers do a really, really good business, as do the strippers, as do the drug dealers. So anyway, Liz in Valley Glen, California. Hey, Liz, what's up?
Hi, good morning, Tom. Or good afternoon. It's been a really bad allergy season out here in California, and I finally went to the doctor, and he prescribed Claritin D for me. So every time I go to the pharmacist, I have to they take my driver's license, and they swipe it in their computer, and then I have to sign for it on a little computer screen.
Yeah, it's because it must have sudafrine in it, which is a precursor. It's used to make methamphetamine.
I understand what the reason is. I'm not cooking up meth, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But why can't, and I can only get a certain amount. I cannot buy two packages, so I don't have to keep running to the pharmacy.
Right.
So why can't they do that with bullets?
That's an excellent
question.
You
can only get so many bullets, and that's it.
Yeah.
You can't buy 6,000 bullets.
If we're going to regulate cough syrup or allergy medication, why not bullets? Excellent point, Liz. Thank you. Very well said. Tina in Jay, New York. Hey, Tina, what's up?
Hi. It's really good to speak to you. I'm a little bit nervous. Forgive me.
It's okay.
I called my congressman today about H.R. 308, the bill that the Congressman McCarthy is sponsoring for bullet control, gun control, assault weapons control.
Mm-hmm.
I get really uptight about this. This scares me. I was scared to give my name because I could be Bradley Manning and face a death penalty for caring about my country. But this guy in Colorado with a 6 million square foot database for the NSA in Utah can get away with buying the rounds he bought, the armor that he bought, and get away with it, not even red flag anybody. How do they expect to catch terrorists?
That's an excellent...
I fear talking to my congressman because the FBI might decide I'm an enemy because I care about my country.
Excellent, excellent point, Tina. Thank you very much for calling and making it. Pete in Chicago. Hey, Pete, what's up?
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Hey, I just wanted to bring up an incident that happened a few years ago, which, you know, many people may not remember, but there was a boy that took some weapons to school, one of these school shootings,
mm-hmm.
and when he pulled out the guns, he killed one child, but a teacher happened to be in the vicinity that was carrying a concealed weapon, and he immediately took his weapon out and he took down the shooter and he killed him.
Yeah.
And at the time, it was even on the news. God knows how many more kids would have been killed had this teacher not had a concealed weapon.
So, are you suggesting to me that if somebody in that theater had a weapon, that they could have stopped this guy?
I'm saying that if there would be no ban on concealed weapons, you might have had not.
No, let me just ask this very specific question. This guy was wearing head to toe body armor, including throat armor. It was capable of stopping pretty much anything except a military round, and he had thrown tear gas in there. So your shooter would have to have he'd have to have something that was bigger than a .357, and he would have had, you know, which is a pretty big damn big gun. And that's even that, you know, maybe not. And then on top of that, he would have had to have a gas mask as well. Should we all carry around a gas mask with us?
No, but you're making.
And night vision goggles, maybe that would be useful?
Now, the point is, if more people were allowed to carry them, these shooters would think twice. And yes,
I don't think so. You're assuming,
armor.
Pete, that these shooters are rational people. They're not. In fact, most of these people are trying to commit suicide. This is the equivalent of suicide by cop.
But at least the people in the audience would have had a chance to at least attempt to take him down.
No, and the people in the audience would have had guns flying would have had bullets flying all over the place. Keep in mind, several bullets went through the wall. One of them shot somebody in the next theater over. The last thing that they needed was more shooters in there. Pete, I just totally disagree with you. I think that this, you know, this whole theory that is being put forward by people on the right, that, oh, if only everybody or only a couple of people in that theater had a weapon. No, if somebody had a weapon, it would not have been successful against this guy. And even, I think I've made my point. I'll stop at that point. Bill in Denver, listening on AM 760. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Good afternoon, sir. And I do have a concealed weapons permit. And the last thing in the world that anybody needs to be doing is firing off guns in a crowded theater when their eyes are full of tear gas.
You Amen.
Just had so many people getting killed. You know, people would have been trying to do the right thing, but the body count would have been so much higher. It wouldn't have helped at all. And I do have a handgun that would do some damage to somebody, even wearing that body armor. And even then, if you can't see somebody, or you've got people in between you and the guy, there's not a darn thing a concealed carry permit holder could do in a situation like that, except for kill innocents.
Yeah, and if he got up high enough to take a shot at the guy, his muzzle flash would mean that him and everybody around him would suddenly be sprayed.
Oh, and he'd see you, and you'd just be shot. I mean, it was a nightmare from hell. Yeah. But even as a concealed weapon holder or a permit holder, I think that these high capacity assault weapons, I think they need to go. And I call them assault weapons of mass destruction
mm-hmm.
because look what they do.
Well, they're weapons of war. We should call them weapons of war. You know, assault. Military style weapons of war should be limited to the military. And
I don't
go ahead.
Oh, I don't need hundreds and hundreds of shots to defend myself.
Yeah.
I don't need hundreds and hundreds of shots to play at a shooting gallery. I don't need, you know, it's silliness.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Second Amendment people will come in and they'll say, oh, don't mess with the Second Amendment. Well, if you read the thing, it talks about a well-regulated militia.
Yep.
Maybe part of being well-regulated means that civilians in a civilian environment don't need military weapons of mass destruction. I don't need one. And I have such a powerful weapon. But you take a look at, you don't need to be able to fire it a million times.
Yep.
It's crazy.
No, I agree with
insanity.
You. And when I visit my brother and we go out shooting, you know, maybe 50 rounds. Well, actually maybe 100 rounds, but not 6,000. You know, and somebody should have been, you know, when this guy bought 6,000 rounds, somebody should have said, hey, wait a minute, something's wrong here. Bill, thank you very much for the call. Well said. Matt in Charlevoix, Michigan. Hey, Matt, what's up?
Yeah, good afternoon, Tom. Having been old enough to watch both the SLA and the Branch Davidians burned alive, and also sharing the view of Chris Hedges for things like Operation Geronimo, are the actions of, in fact, a war criminal, I have tremendous suspicion about the power of the state. Nevertheless, the people like Alex Jones that come up with this idea that somehow Obama is behind this tragedy in Aurora have a tremendous burden of proof of them, because the right wing has created a situation in this country where the country is awash in guns. And so they've created a situation where it's a self-fulfilling prophecy that there will be violence and mass violence at that. And they can infinitely go out and say, well, this is just a plot by this administration or that administration to take our guns away. And so you continue to flood the guns in. Then there's another atrocity. Then they put forward the conspiracy theory. And it really makes no sense, because Obama doesn't need to come up with some kind of risky politically. I mean, think of the risk trying to pull some idiotic plan like that off to the administration when the country's just flooded with guns.
Yeah, yeah, you're absolutely right. No, it's a nonsensical theory. Thank you very much for the call. Lee in Chicago. Hey, Lee, what's up?
You know what? I wanted to find out, I don't know if you know this answer, but, you know, back in the Old West when guys were walking around with guns in holsters,
mm-hmm.
How did that end?
Well, first of all, there's a large part of that that never happened. The fact of the matter is that back in the 19th century, in the 1860s, 70s, 80s, 90s, a lot of those people had fought in or remembered the Civil War, and they did not like guns. I mean, a lot of people died in the Civil War. And B, a gun, a real gun, you know, I mean, they were handmade. These were pieces of craftsmanship. The steel, high quality steel, a gun that was reliable, that wouldn't blow up on you when you tried to use it, could cost as much as a year's work, a year's paycheck. And so very, very few people in the Old West actually owned guns. You had law enforcement officials that owned guns, and you had a few criminals who owned guns, a few famous criminals. But most people didn't. And or if they did own a gun, it was a fairly, you know, low-end gun that had just a couple of shots that they would use to protect themselves from snakes or something. But most of your cowboys, for example, they didn't carry guns. They might carry a bullwhip, but they didn't carry guns. And it was just, it was few and far between. And that's why talk to people who collect antique guns. They will tell you this. There was not this explosion of guns in the Old West. They were very, very rare. They were very expensive. They were very valuable. And so pretty much the only people who used them or had them, and they were very susceptible to rust because they didn't have stainless steel back then. So the people who owned them and people who had them had to literally every couple of weeks take them apart, oil them, put them back together again if they didn't want the things to rust out. So, which takes you back to the only people who had them were law enforcement professionals and, you know, a small handful of bad guys who were wildly exaggerated in the Western myth. So it's a mythology, Lee. It's all it is. It's a myth.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So, you know, A, are we paying, are our corporations, you know, hiding trillions of dollars offshore to avoid taxes? And B, what do we do about Colorado?
I read the news today, oh boy, about a lucky man who made the grave.
The news. Let's check in with Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Victoria, what's in the news?
Well, there's a tremendous amount in the news, Tom.
And by the way, hey, Victoria.
Hey.
I always like to say hi to you. I'm sorry.
Hi, Tom. I will touch very briefly on the Colorado shooting because I'm sure you've talked on it a lot today. There's a great deal else. The Senate took a moment of silence to honor the victims of the Colorado shootings today, and the House also respected the moment of shootings. James Holmes, the suspect in the Colorado massacre, appeared in court this morning and stared blankly ahead for the most part, sometimes looking down or closing his eyes. He was not arraigned. The court appearance in Colorado is called an advisement. It precedes the more formal arraignment. The purpose is to show that there is sufficient cause to continue holding him without bail.
Right.
Okay. Mitt Romney heads off on a foreign trip this week, visiting the UK, Israel, and Poland. This is a major trip, and so I think it's worth talking about briefly.
Okay.
There are risks and rewards for Mitt Romney on this trip. The risks, of course, are that the whole thing could, use an English expression, he's going there, go pear-shaped.
Okay.
And he could make a gaffe.
Uh-huh.
It could all come to nothing. He cedes the U.S. stage to President Obama. And, of course, to those on the left who want to make a big deal out of Bain, taxes, all those issues.
Right.
The rewards are that he gets to talk about foreign policy in a positive way and be seen with world leaders.
There another piece of that risk. Who was it? Bill Clinton? It was one of the Democrats. The Republicans were just hysterical about because he outside the United States, he criticized America.
Well, now the campaign is saying that he is not going to criticize Obama on foreign soil. Now, this is really very interesting because it's going to be difficult for him not to do that if he's going to make major foreign policy speeches, which, of course, are going to be different in foreign policy from Obama's foreign policy.
Right.
What I think he's probably going to do is make foreign policy speeches probably very generic because so far we don't know really what his foreign policy is, and have attack dogs either here or on foreign soil themselves, make attacks. He's already had a surrogate write an op-ed in a German newspaper strongly attacking Obama. So he has no problem attacking the president on foreign soil.
Interesting. Okay.
So President Obama's campaign team is arguing that Romney will need to prove his overseas trip isn't, quote, one long photo op and fundraising tour. Robert Gibbs.
Oh, that's interesting. Which raises the question, how much of Romney's money is coming from outside the United States? I mean, we know Charlie Adelson is bringing money in from China like crazy.
Absolutely. And Romney has some very high-profile fundraisers in the UK, some of which are going to prove embarrassing. It's going to be interesting to see what he does about them. Some of his biggest bundlers are from Barclays Bank.
Ha! Oh, my.
Yes, and yeah. He has a couple of fundraisers planned. It's going to be very interesting to see what he does about them, because I think one of his bundlers is now an ex-Barclays banker.
So, and possibly a soon-to-be resident of, what's the big prison in the UK?
Oh, there's so many.
Uh-huh. The Old Bailey or something, isn't that the...
That's the court. Trying to think where you can go. Fortunately, I've never had to serve.
You never had to concern yourself about it. Would be like the saying Leavenworth here in the United States. But in any case, yeah, the guy may soon be a resident of the state in the not so pleasant way.
Exactly. So
this is not. This could be a wonderful opportunity for the Obama campaign to point out that everybody from Mahmoud Ahmadinejad to the leaders of communist China are funding directly or indirectly the Romney campaign.
Oh, and I'm sure they plan to, and I'm sure that the anti-Baines and the taxers and all those plan to use his absence to make their cases while he's away. The mice will play.
I wonder if he will be confronted with protests while overseas.
I think he's not going to be popular in England. Yes, he's got the Olympics, but he's not going to be popular in England. He's going to meet with David Cameron, with Nick Clegg, with the leader of the opposition. But even though he's got some things in common with Cameron, he doesn't have much in common with Clegg or with anybody else, really. And the Brits don't like him.
Yeah, very interesting. Okay, so what else is up?
Very interesting AIDS conference. The world's largest AIDS conference is going on. Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton said today, the U.S. is committed and will remain committed to achieving an AIDS-free generation. And the U.S. is donating an extra $150 million to help poor countries put the tools to slash the spread of HIV, even without a vaccine, in place, and says science has those tools.
Yeah, that's good news. The two things that have caught my attention with regard to AIDS recently are, one, that AIDS, multidrug-resistant AIDS is starting to pop up, and two, that since Greece has been forced to go through austerity so that, you know, the Germany gives money to the Greek bankers but not to the Greek people. So the banksters, of course, are kept whole. But they had to cut all these programs, including, you know, needle exchange programs and programs to treat drug addicts. The AIDS infection rate, the new AIDS infection rate in Greece is up over 1,000%.
Wow.
Yeah. So you want to stop AIDS, stop poverty, stop austerity. So anyhow, back to you.
The Justice Department defended its proposed settlement with a group of electronic book publishers in a federal court filing today and fired back a criticism from Apple. I commend this story to you. There's an excellent report on it in The Hill.
Okay.
The department sued Apple and five publishers in April, accusing them of colluding to raise the price of e-books.
Right.
Now, Apple and two publishers, Macmillan and Penguin, are fighting and will go to trial. But three others, Hachette, HarperCollins, and Simon & Schuster, have agreed to settle. It's a fascinating case, and they say that they've raised the price of books by $2 to $3.
That's interesting. Four out of the five publishers you just named have published books of mine, and the fifth one is going to next year. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
21 to 36 trillion dollars. Wrap your head around that for a minute. Remember the old days of pirates? I mean, obviously you don't remember the old days of other than Somali pirates, but, you know, we've all read the stories, right? What people generally don't know about the pirates is that pirate ships were little mini democracies. The captain was the least powerful person on the ship. The captains were elected. All the bounty was collectively shared. People took turns doing different kinds of jobs, particularly unpleasant jobs. There's been some really good ethnographic and anthropological studies on pirates. But the popular story of pirates, of course, is that they robbed money and they stashed it in desert islands and treasure chests under the sand, right? $21 to $36 trillion. Now, $1 trillion is $1,000 billion. And $1 billion is $1,000 million. So $1 trillion is $1 million million dollars, right? $1 million a million times. Or $100,000 a billion times. I mean, you figure out however you want to parse it. That's $1 trillion. We're talking about $21 to $36 trillion has been stashed tax-free around the world by about 100,000 wealthy individuals. So let that sink in. $21 to $36 trillion. Let me put this in context. The gross domestic product of the United States of America, which is, by the way, the largest GDP in the world for a single country, last year was a little over $14 trillion. That is every single financial transaction that occurred in our country for the entire year, everything that was bought and sold, $14.5 trillion. Back before the crash, we were at $15 trillion. So say our economy is $15 trillion. We have a $15 trillion economy. About 100,000 people have stashed $21 to $36 trillion in offshore tax havens so that their respective countries cannot collect taxes on it. You tell me we don't have a parasitic economy worldwide? I mean, these folks, parasites it's a friendly way to describe it. And one of those people, apparently, has decided to run for president of the United States. Mitt Romney, in the 1 year for which he did release tax returns, he said, yeah, I got a Swiss bank account, but I'm not going to tell you how much is in it. Yeah, I got accounts of the Caymans, but you people don't need to know how much is there. Now, $1 trillion is $1,000 billion. Romney's got about a third to a half a billion, so he's maybe small potatoes compared to the other 100,000 of these folks, but aspiring. Working his way up the list. This is mind-boggling. I mean, $21 trillion, that's the minimum figure, $21 trillion. Stash in offshore accounts. And a fair amount of it is apparently Americans. Given that, we're the richest country in the world, our billionaires combined with the rest of us... and have about $41 trillion worth of wealth. That's the United States, okay? That $41 trillion. And when you consider that the six Walton heirs are richer than 40% of us, the Fortune 400 are richer than 50% of us in terms of their wealth, I mean, how much of that $41 billion? A trillion. Of net wealth in the United States is owned by a very small number of people. To the best of my knowledge, nobody's really done that math. But how much of that $21 trillion is stashed around the world in tax shelters? This should be a big deal. We should be talking about this. Because we've got a plutocrat running for president of the United States. And he's running against a guy who had literally had student loans until the middle of his Senate tenure. When his book became a bestseller, and he made enough money off his book that he could pay off his student loans. I mean, think about that for a minute. President Obama, I always thought it was kind of tin-eared. I always thought it wasn't a good idea for President Obama to talk like this. But he'll say, people like me don't need tax breaks. And what he's talking about is the fact that as president of the United States, he makes, about $500,000 a year. And he's probably making another, I don't know, a couple hundred thousand anyway a year, just, you know, in ongoing sales of his books. Typically, an author makes about 10 cents on a paperback and makes, you know, anywhere from 30 cents to a buck on a hardcover, depending on how big it is and who the publisher is and, you know, what kind of deal they've made. So, you know, he sold a couple million books. And he got enough money that Obama thinks of himself as rich. I don't think of Obama as rich. I'm sorry. Romney's rich. And I would be astounded if President Obama felt the need to have a Swiss bank account to pay the Swiss. As I pointed out last week, if you want to have a bank account in Switzerland, they don't pay you interest. You pay them interest. It's incredible. It's incredible. And now Mitt Romney, according to Victoria Jones, Mitt Romney's on his way over to the UK, where his bundlers who work for Barclays Bank, actually one of them is an ex-Barclays Bank employee, he was apparently involved in the LIBOR scandal, are going to hold a fundraiser for him. Wait a minute. Romney has bundlers in the United Kingdom? It's okay for foreigners to buy U.S. elections, to own U.S. candidates? Could this have something to do with why we have insane trade laws? Why our tax laws make no sense? I mean, just start putting two and two together. At some point, you know, for decades, I've been going off in my writing. I mean, I've been doing this radio show for about 9 years, but in my writings, you know, for years and years, I've been going off on how we should be, you know, the Buy America Act that Franklin Roosevelt passed in 1935, that all federal purchases have to come from American sources, that during the Reagan administration, they basically stopped enforcing. They started granting unlimited waivers. And no president has undone that. And Nancy Pelosi got a bill out of the House of Representatives to basically force administrations, to force the Obama administration not to grant waivers and say, you know, even if it's more expensive, you have to buy it here in the United States. And the Republicans filibustered it in the United States Senate. It died. So anyhow, for decades, I've been ranting about the need for Buy America provisions, for protectionist trade policies. And these things are continually shot down. Could it be that they're continually shot down because there's a bunch of foreign money owning politicians in the United States, buying legislation? You know, some of the biggest lobbying firms in this town don't just work for the tobacco companies or the oil companies or the big, digital companies. They work for other governments. And they lobby Congress. Is this right? At the risk of sounding like a Yahoo nationalist, I guess I'm a Yahoo nationalist. I don't mean the company Yahoo. I mean, you know. But I think we should be doing something about this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And I hope as Mitt Romney travels around the world in the upcoming week, it gets pointed out by the national media that he's out there hustling bucks from foreigners. Unbalanced, the Tom Hartman Program here with you. Yes, I am sleep deprived, but other than that, I think I'm functional. This is going to be clip number two, Shano. In the wake of this shooting, what would Romney do? Here's Mitt Romney.
And my position on guns is the same position I've had for a long, long time. And that position is that I don't line up 100% with the NRA. I don't see eye to eye with the NRA in every issue.
You're still for the Brady Bill?
I supported the assault weapon ban.
And you're still for it?
Let me describe
but
it.
But you're still for it.
Let's describe what it is. I would have supported the original assault weapon ban. I signed an assault weapon ban in Massachusetts as governor.
Yeah, that was Mitt Romney on Meet the Press. with Tim Russert in 2007. Now, where's Mitt Romney today on this? Do you have a cricket's noise? There we go. That's Mitt Romney today. Oh, my. Senator Ron Johnson, on the other hand, he was on Fox News Sunday, of course, so you can kind of predict what he's going to say, but here he is.
This isn't an issue about guns. This is just really an issue about sick, demented individuals, and it's a tragedy, and I don't think there's a solution here in Washington to solve this problem.
Yeah, and clip number four. Oh, that was clip number four. Okay, clip number three.
We're not talking about handguns. Does something that would limit magazines that can carry 100 rounds, would that infringe on the constitutional right?
I believe so.
Right. If you have a magazine with 100 rounds in it, that's unconstitutional to stop that. This is the Republican from Wisconsin. I just, you know, and then of course, you know, there are conservatives out there who are floating the conspiracy theory that the Obama administration hypnotized this guy, drugged this guy, or he's actually an agent of the Obama administration, the shooter in Colorado, this was a setup, it was staged. Clip number seven, Shana.
So let me ask you this question. If they would stage Fast and Furious, if they would ship up to 20,000 guns and hand grenades to Mexico, and then the memos came out in CBS News to blame the Second Amendment, would they stage this?
You think? Well, clip number eight.
And that's exactly what's happening here with the Loeffner case in Arizona and now this new one in Colorado. They follow the complete M.O.
And clip number nine. This is Alex Jones, by the way.
You have your black op operator coming in a mask, just like Columbine and other events. They do the killing. Then you either kill or drug a patsy who's waiting with amnesics or other chemicals who will then take the blame.
Right. And it's all to, well, the Congressman Wahlberger. This is Congressman Wahlberger, Republican from wherever he is. I think it was Wisconsin, but I could be wrong. No, it's probably not. Okay. In any case, where'd you think? Michigan? Wahlberger? He's on the Daryl Issa's committee here, Government Oversight Committee, and he's talking about Fast and Furious. He's questioning Eric Holder, the Attorney General of the United States, and he's asserting this weird conspiracy theory that Fast and Furious, which was a program designed to stop the sale of military-style assault rifles from gun shops in Arizona into the Mexican drug cartels down in Mexico. And no, they didn't encourage the sale. They were, in fact, trying to stop the sale of these things. No, they didn't ship them down there intentionally. They were trying to stop it. They just, the gun laws in Arizona made it almost impossible for the feds to do their job. They repeatedly went before judges and tried to get, search warrants, arrest warrants, and were unable to. But in any case, here's this member of Congress asserting to the Attorney General that this was something that the U.S. government did on purpose to get people so upset that they would give up their Second Amendment rights to own guns.
That this thing has gone wrong, was set up to go wrong, and frankly, I believe was set up to go wrong in order to deal with Second Amendment liberties of law-abiding citizens and pushing into a perception that it was the problem of the Second Amendment as opposed to law enforcement. And more importantly, Mr. Attorney.
That's enough. Yeah. And then he goes into his rant. And the Attorney General says, you know, respectfully, sir, you're crazy. Not quite like that, but, you know, he's in all respect, and I do mean it respectfully, sir. Not come on, give me a break. You can see Eric Holder doing everything he could but break into laughter. I mean, he frankly, I think he should have. But here is this theory that the shooter in the theater was there because he was a shill for, you know, that guy in the White House who wants to take away your guns. And, It is just so off base. Howard in Los Angeles. Hey, Howard, you got a minute to the break. What's up?
Hey, Tom, just real quickly, the shooter in Colorado, why is it that we don't hear any right-wingers defending his right to own guns. I'm just curious about that.
That's interesting. Well, I think that it would be an impolitic statement to make. But they are certainly saying
right.
that they don't want to see any limits. I mean, that's the clip I just played for you a minute ago. Senator Ron Johnson, the Republican senator from Wisconsin, saying, a clip that'll hold 100 rounds, that's constitutional. That's fine. So essentially, they are defending the shooter's right to own those weapons.
Right, without actually coming out and saying, I just find it's very interesting. They just completely disregard what the point is about looking at this.
The rights that are being ignored and that are not being discussed, and thank you.
Thanks for the call.
The rights of non-gun owners are never discussed. What about the rights of the people in that theater who don't own a gun? Which is probably most of the people in that theater. What about the rights of non-gun owners? Don't we have rights? Not according to the NRA. We're simply gun owners waiting to happen.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Sort of like the old British joke that the European working class know they're the working class, but the American working class think they're temporarily inconvenienced millionaires. We're temporarily inconvenienced gun owners. The bad and the very, very zygophrenically ugly. The good. Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner. The Congressman Sensenbrenner, one of the most conservative congressmen in the country, gave his take this weekend on Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann's Muslim Brotherhood witch hunt. A constituent applauded Bachmann's efforts, and Sensenbrenner responded saying, quote, "The First Amendment prohibits the government from making a distinction between what is a good religion and what is a bad religion. It's none of the government's business. Religion is a personal issue to every one of the people who lives in the United States, whether you practice a faith, how you practice a faith, whether you don't practice a faith, whether you say you're a member of a faith but don't practice it, it's none of the government's business." End quote. You heard that right. One of the most conservative lawmakers in America just stood up for religious freedom and tolerance. Looks like Congressman Sensenbrenner is drinking some different Kool-Aid than the rest of the far right. It's time more conservatives joined him. The bad. Masterpiece Cake Shop. Last week, Dave Mullins and Charlie Craig went to the Lakewood, Colorado bakery to order their wedding cake. While they were getting married in Massachusetts, where same-sex marriage is legal, they wanted a cake for a celebration with family and friends in Colorado. However, the owner of the cake shop, a guy by the name of Jack Phillips, refused to make them a cake. And when asked for the reason behind the decision, Phillips said, "We don't want to talk about that, so you'll just have to make something up." Apparently, we've come to the point in this country where LGBT discrimination is present in little mom-and-pop bakeries and where we can discriminate against who can and cannot buy a wedding cake. And the very, very ugly Russell Pierce. Pierce, the former Arizona state senator who authored Arizona's controversial SB 1070 immigration law, gave his take this weekend on the shooting in Colorado. Rather than just expressing his condolences to the families of the victims, like most people did, Pierce decided to call out the victims in a Facebook post. In the post, Pierce said, "Had they been prepared to save their lives or lives of others, lives would have been saved. All that was needed was one courageous, brave man prepared mentally or otherwise to stop this, and it could have been done." End of quote. It's clear Pierce is arguing for weaker gun controls here and thinks that armed moviegoers could have stopped James Holmes. But Pierce is also attacking the courage and the bravery of those who lost their lives last Friday and of those who were injured, a totally uncalled-for attack on these men, women, and children, and one that is very, very ugly. And, in fact, there are at least two cases that have been fairly well publicized in the press of people who died covering up their loved ones, taking a bullet, preventing a bullet from hitting one of their loved ones or a friend, neighbor, somebody else. That's incredible. Mike in Aurora, Colorado, listening on AM 760. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing? Hey, I just wanted to say real quick that, it's an insult. One of those callers, Jack, said that if someone had a concealed carry permit that they could have stopped it. It's insulting to me because there's no way to know that. And, I had two cousins that were in that theater. Thank God they weren't harmed. I also had a friend that was killed in that theater. And, another thing that I wanted to touch on that gentleman had spoke about was how a teacher who had a concealed carry permit had stopped a shooter.
I believe what he was talking about was also here in Colorado, and the person that stopped that shooter took him down as he reloaded. He did not have an assault rifle with hundreds of rounds. He had a hunting rifle that you can shoot one round at a time and can hold maybe up to five rounds. There's a difference in that, and I don't know any teachers that are allowed to carry a gun in school with them. So I'm sorry, having a concealed carry permit isn't really going to solve any of these problems.
Yep, well said, and I'm sorry to hear about the loss of your friend in the theater there. But very well said. Thank you for calling and sharing your story with us. Wanda in San Ynez, California. Santa Ynez, California. Wanda, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Glad to talk to you. I wanted to point out that in California, employers who hire undocumented workers are held responsible, as well as the employee. So why can't we expose, prosecute, and fine the manufacturers, the suppliers, and the retailers whose sales enable shooters to acquire weaponry?
Well, when Walmart and the NRA were pushing so hard for this, for the Stand Your Ground, Shoot First laws, those laws provide, embedded within those laws is basically a limitation of liability to the retailer and the manufacturers. So in 20 some odd states now, you've got explicit laws that, that limit the liability of those folks. And, but I think your question, if it's a literal question, that's the answer. If it's a rhetorical question, it's a brilliant question and one that we should be asking more frequently and more loudly. Wanda, well said. Thank you very much. Harvey in Milledgeville, Georgia. Hey, how are you? What's up?
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Great. What's on your mind?
First, let me just say that I'm a disabled Vietnam veteran, and I take it that you can imagine that I detest guns.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, I think it's the same question that the previous caller before me was asking. If we can't get the Congress or the President to move on banning those weapons, if we couldn't sue the gun manufacturers and the people that manufacture the bullets.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately we can't, because they've just got a wall of legal protections that have been built up over the years, both through precedent and through legislation, and a court system that is largely friendly to their interests, and the NRA has seen to it. Thank you very much, Harvey, for the call, though. The more times that question gets asked, the more possibility there is that someday the day will come when things change. Carol in Minneapolis. Hey, Carol, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I have I called in for one thing, but I've got a couple more, so I'm going to try to get them fast. Number one, I know I'm one of you people because I want to know more about Romney's taxes.
Are you talking about Ann Romney saying to Robin Wright, you people?
Yeah, and I know I'm one of you people. And if I'm one of you people and you're one of you people, what is she?
She's the elite.
Queen?
She is the queen. That's correct. She is the royalty.
And so I think that should be our thing. I'm one of you people. Who is Ann Romney? And then the next thing is, I think the word crazy should be put into law to precede Michelle Bachmann or any other derivative of her name from now and forevermore. Crazy has to come first.
It's an insult to crazy people. Sorry.
And
Carol,
the other thing is, what about my rights? If somebody has the right to bear a gun, that limits my life, my right to life, to liberty, and to the pursuit of happiness, because I have to live in fear.
I agree, and this is something that I said earlier. Why isn't anybody talking about non-gun owners' rights? By the way, with regard to Ann Romney saying you people to Robin Wright, by the way, African-American woman whose father served in the Tuskegee Airmen, served with distinction in World War II. When she said you people to her, the question that went through my mind is, did she say this? You know, clearly it was a Freudian slip of some sort. Or maybe she just talks like that all the time. I don't know. I mean, there was that time Mitt Romney a week or so ago talked about the waiters in here aren't having such a great year. And it's like all the rich people at the fundraiser are looking at the waiters. And the waiter, that had to be a very uncomfortable moment, too. But A, was Mitt Romney or was Ann Romney, when she said you people, was she speaking of Robin's ethnicity? Or was she speaking of the fact that, you know, Ann and Mitt, because they're high up, they're bishops in the Mormon Church, they're going to get their own planet when they die, whereas normal people just go to heaven, you know, good normal people just kind of go to heaven and get to populate the planet. But Ann and Mitt will get their own planet that they'll be the king and queen of. Or was she speaking of you people being the proletariat, being the, you know, working people, people who are not And Robin Wright is probably worth millions. I mean, she's on national television, but she's not worth hundreds of, in all probability, not worth hundreds of millions or billions or fractions of billions. Which is it? I don't know, but it's probably one of those three. Do you have any other options, Carol?
It's all of the above. I believe
yeah.
it's all of the above when it comes to her. And if your religion, if they are good Mormons, they have to believe what their religion has taught them. And I know a little bit, not a lot, but I know enough to know that, yes, you're right. They think that there is definitely a hierarchy within the Mormon Church that has to do with wealth.
Well, there's a hierarchy after death. I'm not sure it has to do with that. Has to do with wealth. It has to do with good works, and you know, which you know is arguably kind of a good thing, I suppose, if it incentivizes people to do good works. But I don't want to turn this into Mormon bashing, Carol. Let's not go down that road. But there is, because there are a lot of very good Mormons out there. But there is, you know, those are the only three possibilities I can come up with when she said you people, you know, you poor people, you not Mormon people, you African-American people. Maybe there are other you peoples. I don't know. Maybe if you've got an idea, give us a call. Carol, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. David in Chicago. David, we got a minute for the break. What's up?
Yeah. Is that planet that do you think that they'll get when would that by chance be the planet Xenu? And maybe they're really pigeons in disguise.
No, actually, the Scientologists have that one nailed down already.
Okay. But seriously, when we talk about you people, one thing to remember is there are only 233,000 people in the U.S. out of a population of 312 million that have an income of over annually $1 million a year.
There's that many? 233,000?
Yeah, according to Warren Buffett's editorial, Stop Coddling the Rich,
right.
He said there are 233,000 people that have over $1 million a year income.
Wow. I'm surprised it's that large. I had thought it was under 100,000.
Well, 233,000 compared to 312 million, of which 270 million are American citizens. That's less than 0.2%, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. To be in the top 1%, you only have to make $325,000 a year.
Yeah, but getting back to this whole wealth that you know, 21 to 36 trillion.
Yeah.
I wanted to point out that the entire household wealth of the United States is only 55 trillion. So we're talking about 40% of the entire household wealth is tied up in the way that you described.
Yeah, is being hidden in foreign tax shelters. David, thank you for the call. Much appreciated. And yeah, David's got his numbers down. I respect that. I got the smartest listeners on earth on this show. It is such a hoot doing this show.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Even when I haven't slept more than 8 hours in 3 days. Anyhow, we'll be right back. Welcome back. John in Cameron, Texas. John, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, Tom, good to talk to you again. I think as you program this, you're looking at this at the symptom and not the problem. With this shooter, if you listen to your own psychologist stuff that are kind of profiling him, he was a very neglected individual, not only by the police, but I believe he was neglected by the school, by his community, and
he was a straight A student.
He lived in the apartment with him. I mean,
well, actually, I shouldn't say that. We don't know. Apparently, he was dropping out of college because he was having problems with school. I don't think that we know enough at this point to say any of those things, John. And I appreciate your concern. I mean, we do, and thank you for the call. We do need to be looking at issues, for example, of mental health and mental illness. But to go off on this guy or any of these issues right now, I think would be premature. Joe Scarborough, for example, this morning, he said that he thought that the guy was autistic. And now Mike Elk, who is a friend and has been on this program a number of times, been on my TV show a lot of times, he's a brilliant labor journalist. Mike Elk has come out as being autistic, as having Asperger's syndrome, and said that he wants an apology from Joe Scarborough. There's no link between autism and mass murder. And there isn't. And, I mean, it's just like everybody's got a theory. What we need to, and my personal theory is that it's the inequality stupid, that America is one of the most unequal societies on earth, and you combine that with easy access to guns. We're also one of the most gunned up societies on earth, and you've got a problem. But, you know, I could be wrong too. I don't think that there's necessarily an easy answer. Deanna in Albuquerque, listening on KABQ. Hey, Deanna, what's up?
Hey, Tom, thank you so much for being a voice in the wilderness. I just wanted to say that I'm really done with the old NRA mantra of guns don't kill people, people do. If that's their rationale, let's ratchet it up a notch and say, hey, nukes don't kill people, people do, so let's let everybody on the planet have nukes.
There you go. You Ahmadinejad know? Should be, we should welcome his entry
Absolutely.
Into the nuclear community.
Absolutely.
Yeah, excellent point. Or you could flip that around. You could say, okay, to the conservatives who don't think that Ahmadinejad should have a nuke because he's a little unstable, are you really sure that you want everybody in America to have a gun?
Right. Who are you going to know? Who's the crazy down the street? You don't know.
Right, exactly.
You know? And that's what they say. It's only the crazy. I lost my grandparents to gun violence, and my grandfather actually sold the gun to the man that killed them. But little did he know that that was going to happen. So when people say, you know, oh, well, my guns don't kill anybody, well, you don't know that.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, that's a sad story. Deanna, thank you for sharing your story with us and for listening to KABQ. Lauren in Fort Worth, Texas, watching us on Roku. Hey, Lauren, what's up?
Okay, I just want to make a comment regarding the Ann Romney comment about you people. No, mm-hmm. to my ears, there was no racist connotation there. So much as what came across to me quite clearly was she was going back to the whole right-wing media conspiracy thing. When she said that, she meant the media, because we all know
you people in the media.
This persecution complex. You're always hearing them going on about that as though the media is some large nebulous thing with a single opinion of events.
The liberal media.
It goes along right with their storyline about the media.
You know, that makes a lot of sense, and it actually shows Ann Romney in a little better light. You know, if she, it's a false belief, but she may well believe that the corporate media in America is liberal, and that she was referring to you people in the media. If that's the case, that's a little more charitable interpretation, and it's probably accurate. You're probably right. Lauren, thank you for calling and sharing. I'm telling you, we got the smartest people on earth listening to this show. Dominic in Albany, New York, it says you disagree with me. Why?
Tom, I just hear your statement that people buy guns with the explicit purpose because the gun is designed for killing people. That's not true. And the label of conservatism when someone...
Well, wait a minute. What are guns designed for, then?
What's that?
What are guns designed for if not killing people?
Oh, they're designed for a million things, including target practice, hunting, match shooting. And just like a car that may be used for a DWI, it winds up, in fact, if you look at the number of assaults, vehicular assaults and homicides, they far outnumber those that are killed by guns.
But you could do target practice with a baseball.
Well, you can target practice with a gun as well, and you can also drive a car responsibly at 55 miles an hour in those states that require that, or you can drive it irresponsibly at 150 and kill a bunch of people, which happens.
Yeah, it's still a false analogy. It's still a false analogy. There is one product that causes death when used as directed in the United States that we sell,
tobacco.
Which is tobacco, exactly. And then a little closer along that spectrum, there's another product that is designed to cause death when used as directed. Guns actually, you know, I mean, and in fact, there have been all these advancements in the technology of killing, the hollow point bullets, all these higher velocities. Those aren't so that the bullet can hit the target faster.
Well, you're misinformed, and that's not true. I'm, and by the way,
I've shot pretty much every kind of gun there is, from a 22 target pistol to an Uzi, and I've never been able to notice the difference in muzzle velocity other than the kick in my hand. You can't watch a bullet in flight.
Exactly, except that if you're a match shooter, it makes all the difference in the world. It also makes a difference in the world in those particular weapons, your trajectory. If you're shooting a 270 versus a 12-gauge shotgun.
Well, there is a difference there. I'll agree with you on that. But again, you know, these are things that were originally designed to kill people. So, Dominic, this conversation is not going to end. Neither one of us are going to solve this one. Thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Coming up next, more details are coming out about the tragic mass shooting in Colorado. We'll have the latest information, as well as everything you need to know from Capitol Hill and the campaign trail, plus the best of the rest of the news and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman Program, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Get out there, get active, tag. You're it. Occupy something. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.